Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, March 21st, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go there and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that particular chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. While there are many tools available on that website, the primary tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on the link. It downloads automatically. No need to give any identifying information or an email address. Just download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download from your app store a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been either stepped through the worksheet process itself, or they've called in with powerful testimonials about how the use of that tool has helped their lives, or questions to help everybody process or understand the use of those tools even better. I was taking advantage of that archive this weekend myself. You know, one of the things that we offer in this work is the history of doing the work. And what used to happen was Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice would travel the country, get to a town late Saturday night, early Sunday morning, and they would do a talk at a church or a library or some other venue, and then do an afternoon workshop of 3 or 4 hours on Sunday to introduce the work. And then each night of the week, you know, they would make themselves available 5 nights a week for a 2.5 to 3 hour session to teach one of the corollary tools in this work. And then on Saturday, if there was enough interest, they would do a Mind Shifters with Still Point Breathing Workshop, which is an all-day workshop. And then they'd move on to the next town, and there'd be all kinds of excitement because, wow, this is great stuff. Never heard anything like this before. Powerful tool. Want to make my life better. Yippee. And then Michael and Jeannie would be gone. And whatever interest was there would usually fade. There were some rare instances where people actually created their own support group and started using these tools on a regular basis. And back in 2011, when they got the opportunity to start this internet show, it was, you know, back then they didn't have podcasts. It was just an internet show on Blog Talk Radio. They jumped at the opportunity because then they could support people after they'd been to a town in creating and maintaining a support group. And that was the original purpose of this internet show, to answer questions about the reality management worksheet and any of the other tools that are available on whyagain.org, and to assist people who wanted to create and then maintain a vibrant, healthy mind shifters support group. Because what they've learned over the years is that that's really the best way to maintain momentum with this, is to build a community of people who are willing to take 100% responsibility for the experience in life that they're creating and for the emotions that they experience, which, as this work tells us, is self-created. So that means there are archives that go back to 2011, and these shows are available, part of those audio files I mentioned, although the ones I was mentioning have specifically been curated out by Jeannie Rice as relevant to the worksheet process or testimonials about this work, or what some people have said are just the more powerful discussions that they've heard on the internet show over the past 11 years. So you can go to the website at whyagain.org, and you can click on the Start Here link, and as you scroll down, you'll see a link for MP3 files that Jeannie Rice has curated out. You can also go to the website at whyagain.org and click on the picture of the microphone, and that will give you access to the archive that goes back 11 years. The first 8 years was 1 hour a day, 5 days a week, and the last 3 years it's been 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. There's a wealth of knowledge and discussions, but you can also go to mindshiftersacademy.org website and click on the audio library tab and scroll down and get access to some of the shows that I've curated out, as either people told me this was a powerful show, I want access to this. And I was listening to one the other day, it was back in 2019, where I was reporting on a whole series of worksheets I'd done because I'd had such a negative emotional response to life events and the interpretation that I chose and placed on them, that I was having, you know, a lot of physical symptoms, you know, lump in my throat, difficulty breathing, pain in my stomach, etc. And so there are all kinds of ways that this material is available for review and basically to be a tutorial for people who don't understand how could just filling out the blanks on this 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper hold any real value for me in resolving my physical, mental, and emotional pains and upsets. And the answer to that is available in these archive shows. And so I just wanted to take a moment to remind people that those are there, and it's absolutely free. Unlike most things these days, you don't even have to, you know, give your email address and get put on a mailing list. You just click and listen. So please take advantage of that. On that MindShiftersAcademy.org website, there are also files related to what we're doing this year. Beginning January 10th, we started working with the Way of Mastery. And the Way of Mastery as a book has three books combined into one. It has the Way of the Heart, the Way of Transformation, and the Way of Knowing. And what we've been doing since January 10th is going very slowly, some would say methodically, reading that series of lessons and adding commentary. So on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website, you can find files of just the nearly verbatim reading of the first 12 lessons, and you can find the files of this past few months since January 10th, where I've been reading the lessons and then interrupting myself frequently and giving commentary and trying to take a deeper dive into how this book might be used as a process, as a set of tools, as a self-exploration, as a template for your own, creating your own pattern of mindfulness, specifically designed to help you wake up to the fact that you're not just a physical body, that there's a lot more to you than just the protoplasm and the stuff you eat and the stuff you drink and the things you say and do. There's an energy system. And Dr. Michael Rice, in one of his lectures, talks about purpose, personal power, and commitment. And in that lecture, he says that it's really important to understand that you're not just a body. And so the primary purpose for everybody, every human being, he says, is the same. In Michael Rice's work, everybody has the same primary purpose. And Michael defines that as to develop and then strengthen a viable, conscious, spiritual body. Well, that's essentially what this set of tools that they call the Way of Mastery, that's essentially what that is. It's a set of tools to help you develop, become aware of, develop and strengthen a viable, conscious, spiritual body. Now, the way of Mastery talks about it is the goal of this piece of work is to help individual people birth the Christ mind, incarnate, bring into this physical form direct conscious access to this one mind, the Christ mind. Wake up to the realization that there's something more going on here than just your physical body, that there is a wisdom, there is a flow of life, there is a resource that's available for you to tap into every moment of every day, and all you have to do to get access to it is just ask. Now, for most people, that sounds a little too simple, and it is, because we've been trained out of slowing down, breathing, some would say becoming mindful, meditating. We've been trained out of that in this culture. So part of this is to develop some practices, some things I can do to cultivate an awareness of these more subtle energies of life. And that's what we've been reading about. So at this stage of the game, we have moved through the first five lessons and read each of them at least twice and done some reviews. Friday's show on Mindshifters Radio was basically a review of the last five lessons, or the first five lessons in the Way of Mastery. And what I'd like to do today is invite comments or questions before moving on, because my experience with this work is that the first five lessons present a wonderful template for a targeted mindfulness, a specific focus on waking up to the fact that you have access to a wisdom, to a source of wisdom that can't be taken away from you. You might forget it's there. It might, you know, you might live a life where you're conditioned by your family or your culture and never introduced to that connection that you have, to that resource that you have. And so you might be completely unaware of it, and yet it's always there. So once you become aware of it with a set of tools like this, once you choose to slow down and tune into it, it's right there at the ready, never left you, best friend, perfect support, the great comforter, the Holy Spirit, your connection to the divine. It doesn't really matter what you call it. What matters is, once you become aware of it, do you choose to stay conscious of it, to develop a practice that allows you to actively live your life with one part of your mind focused consciously on this actuality, that you have access to something more than just your physical body, and that there are energy systems, and your body is an energy system within an energy system within an energy system. And there are people who've been trying to make sense of this and find practical ways to use the energies that we can become aware of to help us. Here's a book titled Holistic Medicine: Physical Health, Peace of Mind, and Clarity of Consciousness by Jerry P. Gore, MD, G-O-R-E. And he earned his MD from the University of Illinois, and he did his postgraduate work at Northwestern University's Institute of Psychiatry, and he has over 30 years of experience in the practice of medicine and holistic medicine. And he's the medical director of the Center for Holistic Medicine in Illinois. And he's talking about how important it is to understand what he's calling sheaths of life, S-H-E-A-T-H, four different sheaths or levels. The physical, which is your cells, your tissues, and your organs. The energy sheath, which is the energy pathways that some people call meridians, and whether or not they're balanced or blocked or unbalanced. And when that happens, that results in physical, mental, and emotional problems. There's the mental sheath, which is your mind, your conscious, and your unconscious, that contains, you know, issues to be worked out like conflicts, worries, stresses, and all of these interact with and either open up or block the energy pathways and the physical body. And then he says there's the wisdom sheath, and the location of the wisdom sheath is outside of time and space. And so this is what he refers to as the spiritual connection. So the physical, the energetic, the mental, and the spiritual. And as he's working with people, he pays attention to all four of these. And he pays attention to this from the Ayurvedic energy system, the chakras, and the Ayurvedic medicine, which, you know, includes changes you feel in your body when you eat consciously or when you eat certain foods. And those foods interact specifically with your energy and your personality type. So it's fascinating how just about every good book I pick up that talks about the psychology and the spirituality is saying the same thing. We've got to become aware of the different, more subtle energies. If all we do is pay attention to the glycemic index of the food we're eating, or whether or not we're eating enough carbs or enough complex carbohydrates or enough protein, if that's all we're concerned with, we're going to be very lopsided in our experience of life. But when we understand that breath is important and the kinds of foods we eat interacts with our energy system, and our choice of interpretations of life, whether or not we have a sense of purpose in life or we have this belief that we're just here to consume as much as we can, all of these things create dramatic impact on our life experience. And so far in the first five lessons of the Way of Mastery, the way my mind looks at it is we're being given a set of tools, we're being introduced to some actualities of life that we may not have been introduced to in our families and our culture up until now. Primarily among those ideas is that we are the ones creating our experience of life by how we choose to focus our conscious awareness in each moment and how we choose to interpret what hits our senses and the pictures that our perception will show us. So, I'm open to comments and questions about what people have learned, what they've liked, what they've not liked, what they're struggling with, related to the first five lessons. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. What is new? What's challenging? What's helping you? What's the struggle for you? 563-999-3581. And again, if you want a summary of the first five lessons, I encourage you to tap into Friday's show. But before we move on, either going back and reading the first five lessons again or moving on to lesson six, I'm curious as to what people are finding and whether or not your experience of the first five lessons is similar to mine, that it's a set of tools and the point of the tools is to help you develop and strengthen a viable conscious spiritual body by waking up to the fact that there's a lot more going on here than just you sitting there in a physical body and have life come at you. That your experience of life is your own creation. Of course, your family, your culture, they get a lot of credit for that because it's your family and your culture that introduced you to language and gave you concepts for thinking about everything you experience. And it's that conceptual framework and your choice of applying it that creates your experience of life. Area code 541, you're in the air. Who do we have? 541, your hand went up. And I turned on
Hello.
Your microphone. Are you there, 541?
Hello. I'm mute challenged. Are
Welcome.
You there?
Is this Linda?
Yes. I had my mute button on and didn't realize it. So I just have a very quick comment. One is, as I've mentioned before, I'm finally the way of mastery, absolutely a major key for me to understanding the Aramaic gospel as Michael is approaching it. And the tools work really well for me, so I really appreciate that. They seem to help me get out of my mind more, whereas a lot of worksheets seem to throw me into my mind more. That's only my perception at the moment. So I am working with both of them, and I'm especially delighted with these for this moment in time. I'm ready to move on to lesson six if everybody else is. I feel very complete with the first five lessons.
Okay, and are you finding that what they're offering in the first five lessons is part of something you're doing in an ongoing practice, or is it just a little intellectual exercise? How are you approaching this?
Well,
when you
I'm
say
really...
when you say you're complete with the first five lessons, that's what prompts this question.
Oh, only for this moment in time, you understand. And I'm perfectly happy if you want to go back through it again, because there's nothing in there that I won't go back to again and again. I'm the precepts, I think that's what you call them, his principles that he states.
He calls them axioms.
Yeah, thank you. I'm repeating them frequently, quite frequently, because I need to. And they're very helpful. They're very affirming for me. They seem to be having an effect on me, although you would have to speak to my friends and Larry to find out if that's delusional or not. I do feel a shift. And so I'm very grateful. They also help me to appreciate all the worksheets more. At this moment, I just feel that it's right for me to put my attention on the way of mastery right now, because I know it will help me, channel me into being able to use Michael's worksheets and Jeannie's worksheets in a way that will be more servicing for me and my growth than
so,
I was
so
when I was
you...
doing them alone.
So how would you label the shift that you say you're feeling?
I think being more comfortable with myself, because I'm real hard on myself. And I have noticed that I'm not so angry with myself, judgmental towards myself, and I've noticed that that's allowing me to transfer that into my relationship with others. It's slow, but I feel
so
different.
So what kinds of things would you choose to get angry about and then think it was you causing yourself to be angry?
Not being perfect, not getting it right all the time, not focusing enough, just anything where I am either telling myself or somebody else, I perceive somebody else telling me that I am not good enough or whatever. That's what comes up. Oh, you just messed up again.
And so what, how are you using the first five lessons to make a shift in that?
How am I using them? I am using them by practicing the axioms to the very best of my ability.
Axioms like you don't experience anything that you haven't called to yourself, and you need do nothing, and...
Right.
Right, okay.
And that I was created in the image and likeness of the Creator, and therefore it allows me to gradually lift myself out of this right-wrong conundrum that I
because
can
what
often
you,
feel myself in.
Because what you decree is, and so if you say... Oh, I'm such a schmuck and I screwed up and I'm so terrible.
Right.
Then you create
right.
the experience of that.
Right.
And if
and
you
I
decree
also,
what some of these things in the first five lessons suggest, some of these statements or prayers, if you decree those, then you begin to have that as an experience.
Right. That's exactly. You said it better than I could ever say it. Or at this moment that I could say it. Yes, that's what I'm, that's what, where I'm putting my faith and my practice in. It's daily. Like even we're right now, we're house sitting for the owners, and there is a situation that's come up that I feel like I need, or I don't need to do anything, let me remind myself, that would be very good to tell the owners this information that they need to process, not me. And my one of the things that I have done all my life is I've stifled my voice out of the fear of being rejected, not acceptable, wrong, whatever. So this is challenging in all departments for me, and I'm just really not only challenged but actually excited to know that there is an ability within myself to shift, not just a capacity.
All right.
And
well,
I hope that's
I thank
helped.
You for the input.
I'm glad you clarified. I'm really glad you helped me clarify it.
I'll leave your microphone on and say hello to Susan. Welcome,
yeah,
Susan.
Yeah, we're two avid customers here. You know, these lessons have cut both ways. I feel as if the lessons have been just from the get-go a period of rest in the middle of the day, where I can settle in and leave off with whatever I've been busy on and listen and get fed. It's almost like being read stories as a child. And then start to applying them. But as I apply these things, like, for instance, allowing your distinction between detachment and allowing, and I don't know whether that is from the course, the Way of Mastery, or something you just came up with, but that has been one of the best, most useful things of all, is to, because I felt guilty about detaching, and I've got an ongoing painful situation with more than one grandson, three of them, and possibly now a fourth, who aren't doing very well. And to be detached seemed like not doing my job, and I would listen to Mimi do nothing and so forth, but allowing
said you
seems like...
to do it at 10.
Okay, I'm going to leave about quarter till, because I want to hit a six.
I just muted Celinda. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks.
So let me just, since there's a break here, let me just say what comes to me to say right there. You just made the statement. You have one, maybe even three grandsons who are not doing well.
Yeah.
And I would just call you to notice the labeling and judgment there.
Oh yeah.
And what this set of tools calls us to is to just wake up to when we do that, and how that labeling and judgment right there is a good target for us to understand that's going to create our experience of life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to take us instantly across the universe from where we say we want to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand. So I feel like Guy Finley saying, I am a wreck.
Just look at what happens when you decide to see that defining your grandson's choices in life as not doing well, how that leaves you feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And how it might leave you feeling if you decided to just say, they're choosing a path in life right now that isn't what I would choose. And I'm working on releasing all of the programmed judgments that arise in me when that's happening, that I've been conditioned to judge and to constrict and pull away from or try to change or attack whenever someone chooses a life path that doesn't coincide with what I would choose. Just notice the difference in how it feels to make that assessment and to become aware at that level that this is what you're doing. Just notice the tension in you. This is not about what's right or wrong. Are they doing good or bad? This is just about what happens in you when you judge it.
Mm-hmm.
And is it possible to say that they are sparks of the divine mind, they're lovely human beings, they've had their ups and downs, as all of us do. This is a period in their life where they're learning rapidly through, all kinds of consequences for their choices. Any of those things are okay to say because none of them is in judgment. They're just discerning. They're just, various neutral descriptors. But as soon as I say they're not doing well, they're doing poorly, or they're so stuck, as soon as I say that, just notice what comes up in me and how much more difficult it is for me to get into that resonating, that loving energy space, which we know is so beneficial.
Hmm. This is a tangent, but I don't think they are choosing what they're doing. That's one of the reasons I get so messed up.
So you're in denial of the first axiom. Right, so you're in denial of the first axiom, and you're not for you. I mean, you'll say, okay, I'm choosing, but they're not.
Okay.
Right.
Yep. Okay. Well, you see, I'm a beginner here. I think you ought to start from the first lesson.
We're all beginners here, but the first axiom says, just. Here's the first step in awakening. Just allow this thought into your mind. Nothing you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. Now, I'm not here to tell you that's the gospel truth and that's what's really happening. I'm just saying what we're asked to step into in this work is applying that as a thought and seeing how it resonates for us and what kind of impact it makes on our life experience, our mood, and our flexibility, or the options we see when we understand that we can allow these thoughts into our mind, or we can just keep running on the conditioning of our family and culture. And, you know, the conditioning of your family and culture is on full display when you say, my grandsons are just not doing very well.
Mm.
You know, that's like looking at somebody who's graduated college and gotten a six-figure job and say, oh, they're doing so well. And just to slow down and look at this work is calling us to say, wow, if I make that kind of an assessment about some young person, that they've gone to college, gotten good grades, gotten the degree, they get out and they take a job that makes them over $100,000 a year, what am I basing that assessment on? And is it really anything other than the physical? No. Maybe a little bit of the mental, but the emotional, the spiritual, the physical health, no, none of that's contained in that assessment. And so that's what we're called to do in this work, is to question all of those conditionings, trainings, some would call brainwashings, to the idea that the only thing that's important is your physical body and your physical stature in the community and your job and your money. And it might be that, you know, your grandsons are having a very rough time right now, but that sits apart from you saying, I'm going to judge that they're not doing well. You know, one of I forget exactly where it is, but the idea is that how do I know? Oh, yeah, Michael Rice says this at one point. He says, look, he's trying to define for people the difference between saying this is right and this is wrong versus saying I'm going to choose that this is what's right for me, and what this person's choosing may not be wrong, but it's not right for me at this point in time. And then he says, Here's the example. I have somebody that I know, and they call me up and they say, hey, Michael, hey, Tim, you know, I've heard you say, you know, you're looking for donations for your work, for Dr. Michael Rice's work, and take it to the next level. And I got this plan. I live in a small town, but there's a couple big companies that work here. They got a bank here that's got like zero security. So I'm breaking into it this weekend. Want to come? I'll give you half of it. Half of, you know, our take. I'm sure it'll be several million dollars. It'll be your half. Now, Michael says, it's possible for Michael to say, that's not right for me. Bless your heart if you feel like that's what you need to do. It's not, Michael's job is not to tell that person they're wrong, because that's right versus wrong thinking, good versus bad, off, on, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Very concrete, very judgmental. But he says, I can make an assessment and say, I don't choose to risk that. I don't think that would be right for me.
Mm-hmm.
But who am I to say that that's wrong for this person to be doing that? For all I know, they need this life experience, this run-in with the law, this whatever, to move to their next level of their life spiritually. I don't know their path. I don't know what their strengths and weaknesses are and what they're struggling with. So he says, he hangs up the phone after telling his friend, that's not right for Michael. You know, good luck with that. Michael might say, you know, let me ask you, have you considered this option? Have you considered what happens if it goes wrong? Have you, you know, he might help him question it somewhat, but he'd hang up without judging him. And then Michael might say, okay, now I'm a person in the world, in the physical realm, and I have this knowledge. Maybe what's mine to do is to call the authorities and let them know that there might be this plan, and they might want to, you know, take precautions so that nobody gets hurt, et cetera. just the concept that I can't know what another person's path is. Just I can say, I know until the cows come home. And what this this book tells me over and over again is, I don't know anything. I don't know when I was made. I don't know why I was made or why I'm here. I can play with some thoughts about, well, maybe I'm here to extend love. Or I can play with thoughts about, well, maybe I'm here to see how much money I can accumulate and how many degrees I can get. What this work is pointing me to is that as I go through that, if I step back and watch the process, I wake up to the fact that I'm the one creating my experience of life. And if I judge that my grandsons are really not doing very well right now, I create one experience for myself and for my interactions with them. If I choose a different interpretation, well, my grandsons are choosing this. Seems to me to be a rather harsh, you know, way to learn a lesson and not what I would choose, but, you know, who knows? I'm going to send them love. I'm going to keep doing my work. I'm going to notice the tension, the anger, the fear, the hurt, the frustration as it bubbles up in me when I think about them and do everything I can to dismantle it so that when I think about them, I tap into the loving, you know, the best, most nurturing, supportive, loving family member place I can be and send that energy to them. See how that changes your experience of interacting with them.
I think I took my first breath in a long time, Dr. Tim, hearing you say those things. Thanks for saying them again and again and again and again. I have been interpreting and thinking I ought to do something, all the stuff that we're invited not to do. And it gets very practical because we've been giving him an allowance and we're thinking we have to stop because he spends it on stuff, pot and stuff like that. But I can make that choice and still hold to the other idea that you said, to just perhaps this is an experience he needs, and continue to allow and not define or label. Thanks.
Well, you know, Guy Finley says, there's nothing more practical than true spirituality. And so if you define spirituality operationally, right, if you try and stay with that observation or statement that Guy Finley puts up, that means the true spirituality is the understanding of how things actually work. It's not some pie-in-the-sky theory. It's this observation.
Right.
About how things work. And, you know, ultimately, and I began working in the field in therapy in corrections as a probation officer.
Right.
There's all kinds of people who've made decisions that put them at odds with the laws of the land, right? The local constable and the judge and the police and the sheriff and the county. And, you know, I began working, sitting and talking to people who've already been arrested and found guilty and sentenced either to jail time and probation or first probation. And if they get through that without a further problem, then they don't have to go to jail. And so my experience and my training beginning back in, you know, 1974 was very practical. let's just figure out what very, very simple, practical things we can help a person choose differently or change in their life that might result in a different life experience for them. And, of course, that has stayed with me ever since then, 7 years in corrections and then all the study for the doctorate in clinical psychology and all of that. I've never left that because this focus on what is practical and might help somebody make a practical change in their life has been, you know, for me, top priority. So you can have a wonderful theory and you can have a fascinating little technique, but if I try it on me and I don't see benefit, then I don't keep using it and I don't promote it for the people I work with. The next thing I would say is that my personal family experience, you know, loving people, talking to them, living with them, doing everything I can to try and be a nurturing support for them, whether it was a cousin or a son, my personal experience is I can't make anybody do anything they don't want to do. And so I've had to deal with the rather poignant, intense actuality of life that has me watching a cousin go to prison, federal prison, not once, but twice. I had to be an active participant and then watching as my son chose to break enough of the laws of the land to end up in jail and have both misdemeanors and felonies charged against him. And there's nothing I can do. I mean, I was the best father I knew how to be. I had a really good set of parents. I didn't do so well in the first marriage for whatever reasons, and it fell apart. And you could say, well, that's what caused this and that. But the bottom line is, I had two sons, and only one of them made those kinds of choices. And so everything that I do with people, what I'm talking about on the internet show, what I do with people in my private sessions, is based on that. If it's practical, it's probably spiritual. Because there's nothing more practical than true spirituality, because it's just dealing with exactly what is, the way things function. It's like Dr. Michael Rice talking about, you know, these natural laws and how, you know, there is no law in the land that you break. That's a rule. That's a state regulation. Law, actual law, natural law, doesn't get broken. It's there. It's functioning all the time. If you don't want to follow it, then you've got certain consequences you're going to live into. But you're not going to break a natural law. And the fact of the matter is, one of those, you know, natural laws is I can't make anybody do anything they don't want to do.
That is very true.
So, what most of us have been conditioned to think next right after that is, so there's nothing I can do. And that's not true either.
Mm-hmm.
Because this work, the way of mastery in the first few lessons, is actively trying to get me to understand that my choice of where I focus my mind energy is a creative force. So what's mine to do? Do I sit and generate anxiety and fear and resentment? I can't believe this kid. I poured everything I had into this kid, and he chose this and that, and how dare he ruin my reputation as a therapist? I could choose thoughts like that. Or I could choose choose again. I could choose to focus on what's mine and how much I have affection for this person and how much I can see as highest and best and send that loving energy out towards them the way Pierre Pratervand recommends, or I can pick up the Mind Shifter tool, or I can pick up the Reality Management Worksheet, or I can pick up Byron Katie's worksheet. It has me question every negative thought, and I can actively work to change my energy state to be more in alignment with that creative flow. Some would call it love, some would call it gratitude, some would call it appreciation, and send that energy out into the field and change my experience of life and energetically send something much more nurturing and nourishing toward these people that I have so much affection for or so much connection to. So that's my offering, and that's the history behind it, is that it's a very practical. It's not just woo-woo.
No, it's definitely not woo-woo. Well, I hope you're not discouraged. Having read us those lessons over and over, and you get a customer who comes up and needs lesson one all over again, but I did. I needed it.
Well, if I chose to generate discouragement, that would be mine to do some worksheets on. That would not be you discouraging me, right? And I am not discouraged.
Right.
This is the work. I have to keep coming back to the work, right? And infinite number of times until it's complete. You know, Michael used to talk about, hey, they would ask Yeshua, Michael would say this tongue-in-cheek, hey, Jesus, buddy, how many of these worksheets we have to do? And Yeshua would say, 77 times 70, where 7 is the number of completion, and when you add 0 to a number, it means infinity. So it's essentially that phrase is a way to say, you've got to do this forgiveness process an infinite number of times until it's complete. And again, the forgiveness process is the dismantling of false beliefs and energies within the individual. So if you're stuck in a counterproductive pattern of judging and generating fear, and your favorite miserable feeling is anxiety, you've got to do the work of dismantling that pattern an infinite number of times until it's complete. And as Celinda was saying earlier, you know, she's already using the first 5 lessons to be less negative towards herself, to beat herself up less. So, you know, maybe there's some of that in there for you. Don't be hard on yourself. Just be gentle with yourself. And understand, you're just like all the rest of us, except that in this case, you're dealing with a very intense life situation for people that you love dearly who are choosing in a way that you wouldn't normally choose for them and that you can't see from your current perspective how it might all work out in the end. So, anyway, thank you for comments and questions. Thank you, Celinda. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And hopefully we will welcome Jeannie Rice. I will.
Hi, thank you.
Welcome. Have a lovely show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Monday, March the 21st, 2022, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael just a minute to get dialed in, and I'll just say there's a couple of glitches that have happened on the website here lately, and we are getting those worked on. One of them was that if somebody sent an email through the website, then when I responded, they got this big message that it couldn't be verified that it was from us, and to not click a link or whatever. So we're having that worked on, and so hopefully by the end of the day, that'll be taken care of. Anything like that that happens, please let us know so we can address it. And welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here with us once again as we engage in this conversation about first century Aramaic forgiveness and all the corollary tools that are tied in with it. One of the things that this work recognizes is that addiction is caused by underlying unresolved pain that people compulsively use anesthetics, alcohol, drugs, sex, television, whatever it is, to avoid feeling and dealing with what's going on inside of them. In fact, I've just been working on, it's not complete yet, but have been doing some research on alcohol and decided to write an article that gives some of the facts about alcohol. And when you look at it, it's really shocking the impact of alcohol around the planet. And so what I'd like to do is I'm just going to read the article. It's not complete yet, but it's complete enough that it shocks the mind when we look at it. And so I'd like to share that with you. And I've written it from the point of view of imagine that you're an alien. And so the title of the article is Aliens Shocked. Imagine you arrived last night from the moon and are exposed for the first time to humans. Curious, you observe, being New Year's Eve, that many have a special cabinet in their homes where they store a celebration fluid reserved for use on special occasions when their most cherished friends and family come to visit. And they really want everyone to enjoy themselves and have fun together. You're told it's a social lubricant which produces euphoria and decreases anxiety. Wow, you think, that sounds great, pretty good. As you watch the good times roll, you observe these friends and family members get drowsy, stumble, sometimes uncontrollably, and begin to slur their speech. You're surprised when you observe several of these good time partygoers do not seem to be having such a good time and actually get a little snarly with each other. Confused by the conflict between what you've been told and what you're observing, you listen to voices which get louder and louder as the party goes on. Conflicts that were not apparent earlier arise and escalate to fisticuffs. You think euphoria and decreased anxiety? This looks like anger and disappointment to me. These people who gathered for a good time together eventually kind of stumble around as though in a stupor. Some of them go into blackouts and end up in a coma, and one young partygoer actually dies. You find it odd that this species, in order to have fun with cherished friends, each time they get together, come to believe, having been skillfully brainwashed by the purveyors profiting from the sale of this literally poisonous, deadly fluid, that offering this refreshment to their closest friends and family is a fine way to honor them. They actually think it's reasonable to do extreme damage to their brains and bodies from this toxin in order to have fun. Now, by now, you've probably figured out that I'm not really from the moon, but someone who was brought up with little knowledge of what alcohol is actually doing to the bodies and minds of its users, but certainly knew from direct observation what it did to families, marriages, and children's lives. I bought the lie that alcohol was okay. Profiteering manufacturers who spent decades honing the skill of making it sound like there was a good and constructive use for this substance had me conned. Working with individuals and families over the last half century, I often get to see the enormous damage done by the use of alcohol. Some will try to tell you the damage done is only from the abuse of alcohol, but that's simply not true. People that are suffering from the use of alcohol by family members who believe it is their right to visit their alcohol-induced insanity on family and friends alike, just accept this as a normal thing. If you've never looked into the facts and statistics about alcohol, here's a synopsis. Alcohol is a central nervous system depressant, toxic to the central nervous system. These nerves that control blood flow, feelings, digestion, elimination, speech, heart and liver function, breathing, reproduction, movement, sleep cycles, comprehension, and behavior and intelligence are impacted. As a result of interference in the functioning of the central nervous system, alcohol assaults and damages every system in the body and the mind. The first signs of that assault is the destruction of the ability to think clearly and speak intelligently. Chronic alcohol exposure causes more direct effects on the brain, which results in multiple major life and psychosocial problems. It causes blood cells to coagulate, hence reduces blood flow to the brain, so that under its influence, the person becomes confused and begins to go into a state of progressive degeneration. Damage increases exponentially with use. Quote-unquote normal effects include an increase in injuries, conflict in health, internal problems including liver and heart disease, sleep disorders, depression, stroke, bleeding from the stomach, several types of cancers, and an increase in the risk of birth defects. The liver, in an attempt to detoxify alcohol's poisons, begins a process of necrosis, tissue that's called cirrhosis. Externally, due to behavior anomalies induced by alcohol, there's an increased risk of sexually transmitted diseases. There are increasing rates of violence, accidents, vandalism, and unprotected sex. In the U.S., alcohol is the fourth leading cause of preventable deaths, with 88,000 people dying each year, 10,000 of them auto-related. Globally, 3,300,000 people die of alcohol-related causes each year, and it's the fifth leading risk factor for premature death and disability among people between the ages of 15 and 49. Now, let's shift perspectives again and look on this phenomenon from the perspective of our alien observer. Shockingly, you find out that alcohol use is the number one killer in the age group 20 to 39 years of age, where approximately 25% of the total deaths are alcohol attributable, and it is linked to 40% of violent crimes. You're deeply disturbed and wonder what's going on with this species when you discover that the adults and the political systems of the world actively support the brainwashing of its own young into believing the use of this substance is normal. Then you're doubly appalled to find that another substance with competing brain-destroying properties, THC, is being maneuvered into becoming as acceptable as alcohol. All for the desire to avoid dealing with self-generated painful feelings and the love of little green strips of paper called money. Shocked, you turn to revulsion as you look into alcohol's effects and learn that in 2014, which are the latest statistics available, National Institute of Health estimated that 16.3 million people ages 18 and older and 679,000 adolescents ages 12 to 17 have an alcohol use disorder, and that alcohol contributes to over 200 diseases and injury-related health conditions, most notably alcohol dependence, liver cirrhosis, cancers, and injuries. The economic cost of alcohol in America is approximately $249 billion, a quarter of $1 trillion, 4.6 million emergency room visits a year, and as a cause of death, it is second only to another deadly substance promoted in our culture that humans sell to each other for little green strips of paper called tobacco. As an alien observer, you're somewhat appalled when you learn that college kids are particularly vulnerable as they mimic their parents or their culture's advertised way of having fun. Alcohol, you discover, is involved in 50% of date rapes, an equal number of violent crimes in America. In the U.S., it is estimated that 39 million rapes each year happen, and alcohol is involved in 25% of them. And these strange earth creatures fight quite violently for the right to continue to use the substance if it's taken away. You look deeper into this strange self-destructive custom of consuming alcohol, and you learn that the brain's inhibitory function is compromised by this substance, leading users into poor decision-making abilities, and a myriad of physical diseases, such as liver failure, cancer, a tendency toward destruction and violence of self and others. It seems bizarre to you that those possessed by violence when they use alcohol are especially drawn to take out their abhorrent behavior on those close enough to be called family. As you investigate, you find that children and spouses are the people alcohol users are supposedly closest to, and are the usual objects of the violence brought about by the use of alcohol. You find the brain dysfunction produced by alcohol especially interesting. You learn that in this strange human species, the inhibitory system of the brain prevents one from acting out stored behaviors repulsive to that individual. You learn that after consuming just a few ounces of alcohol, the blood flow to the brain of the individual becomes so compromised that the inhibitory function fails, and any behavior, no matter how ancient or suppressed it's become, all of a sudden takes over. People so influenced replay past decisions and find themselves unable to function or reject behaviors that would be abhorrent to them when sober. So I just put that out for everybody to think about. And a question, I've actually been doing some research also. What came up was, I wonder just how much of a factor alcohol is in war on the planet. And I find it interesting, at least so far, I've not been able to find anybody who's done any research on that. I mean, do you suppose that this country on the other side of the world that's famous for its vodka consumption, do you think alcohol plays any part in the stupor that allows people to go off and slaughter their neighbors like it's happening? What do you suppose? Look at the hard-drinking soldiers and the hard-drinking generals, and go back and look through history, and the depiction of alcohol involved in those who make the decision to go to war is how much of it, I really wonder, yesterday and today, the millions who've been slaughtered on the planet has been done because somebody who was in the power, in the place to make a decision, just go look at the number of alcohol charges in our Congress and our senators. Go take a look at that. And, what's going on? And when do we wake up? When do we realize what's really happening and how deeply the culture promotes as well? It's just the abusers. No, anybody who drinks alcohol has a problem. I don't care how you cut it. When you have to start to shut down the inhibitory function of the brain, what happens with alcohol is it causes blood cells to coagulate. So blood sticks together, and the most demanding part of the body, most demanding organ of the body, the brain is about 2% of the body's weight, but it takes about 10% of the oxygen nutrition of the body to function. And when blood cells coagulate and stick together and can't get into the brain, the brain starts to dysfunction. One drink's all that takes. You say, I just enjoy my glass of wine. You may be insulted by this, but I invite you to just really start to take a look. As I say, I was brought up in a world where it was just normal. That's just the way it is. But think back, when you were a kid, or look around today at the people who use alcohol and what kind of assaults happen to spouses, whether it's the woman who's drinking with her husband or the husband who's drinking with his wife, the children, parents. It's when you really look at that, it's, at least, pardon me, when I look at that and I look at that whole picture, it's absolutely shocking that going to the bar is a normal thing. Compromising the function of the brain, saying, I don't want my brain to function properly. And by the way, if you think that pot's any better, it does not tend to bring out the violence that alcohol does, fortunately. But it's being maneuvered. It's a big moneymaker. Now, pot functions differently. Basically, what happens with pot is THC happens to be the right-shaped molecule to block the openings in a brain cell into which nutrition enters the brain cell and, pardon me, I shouldn't say brain cell, any cell in the body. But again, it's accentuated in the brain because the brain demands so much nutrition and oxygen. And the half-life, depending whose numbers you take, of a THC molecule is somewhere between 8 days and 8 months. I don't know whose numbers are correct, but half-life means if it's only 8 days, you know, if somebody smokes pot every day, the THC that's stuck particularly in the brain cells, it happens throughout the whole body, so it creates anomalies throughout every cell in the body, but particularly in the brain, you know, I mean, how many potheads do you know that really go out and accomplish and get things done? What's called the reticular activating system is compromised with pot. That's why, you know, we have this thing that reminds us about the goals that we have and the things we want to accomplish. If the brain is working properly, you don't forget that you were going to achieve this. You go ahead and achieve this. But what gets knocked out with THC because of the way it compromises brain function is this reticular activating system in particular. And so people forget. You know, how many people do you know who are potheads who, you know, had wonderful relationships and they were getting married and blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden they're screwing around with somebody else. Well, forgot because of the dysfunction of the brain. So just, you know, an invitation for everybody to look. We're here about bringing this body-mind unit to a peak of its possible performance. And yet our culture promotes substances that compromise intelligence and function of our highest and best possibilities. It was a kind of a funny meme that somebody posted on my Facebook page a while ago, and it is somewhat true, and that was that if you put six men together with alcohol, you're going to end up with a fight. If you put six men together with pot, you're going to end up with a band, which, yeah, it kind of tends to go in a different direction, but still, the compromising the function of the brain is the problem. So I just thought I would put that out there. It's an article I'm working on. I haven't posted yet. I'm not quite finished the article, but it seems finished enough to share with you, and I would love feedback. I'd love your thoughts. Does that fit for you? Does that make sense? Does it insult you? What happens for you when you think about what I've just shared with you? And I'd love to hear from you. And if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our call-in number, you know, if you call directly into the show, is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And if you push 1, that will raise a hand in the control panel, and Jeannie will know that you want to talk to us. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on this or anything else related to the work we're doing together. So, Ms. Jean, do we have anyone in the phone queue with a hand up? Great.
We have two hands up. The first one is area code 760. You're on the air. I think it's Ann.
Hey.
Hey there, young lady. We haven't heard your voice in a while. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. I had it up for the end of Dr. Tim's show. I was going to chat with Susan because she and Celinda called in and we were kind of giving feedback on his, you know, does he move forward with the way of mastery or you know, redo or and how has it been impacting us? So I was going to share with what Susan had brought up. However, then you came on and gave this, so I'll address that since you asked about that.
Well, let's go for both.
I can talk to Susan later. Well, what I was going to say to Susan, I don't know if she's still on. Jean might be able to tell. I had my experience to go visit with my daughter and son-in-law and my, you know, my grand dogs, and it was great. And I know that if I had not started listening to The Way of Mastery, it would have been a different experience. So it was a more positive experience, I'm saying, because I have been listening to The Way of Mastery, to The Way of the Heart is the title of the section. And the two words that I had shared with, you know, with all the girls, I'm going to say the girls because that's who happened to be sharing before with Dr. Tim, my takeaways were awareness, more listening to myself, listening to others intently instead of trying to come up with my own answers, and direct observation. And so when I was beginning to get anxious about going up there, you know, and my observations of my daughter and son-in-law's relationship and yada, yada. And because I had overstepped my boundaries when they were still living down here, and, you know, and rightly so, my daughter had a conversation with me. So I had to then step back and say, okay, is it about me? You know, is it about them or is it about me? Well, no, I still have my work to do. That's what it's about, because I just happen to see behaviors that she's doing that I was doing. So
right.
This time.
Power person doesn't fall far from the tree, does it?
No, it doesn't. However, when you start to be more aware and when you use direct observation, then you don't have to fix it. And so when Susan was sharing, you know, about her grandson, I had that same experience with my daughter and son-in-law's relationship, and, oh, yeah, I'm going to fix it because I know better now. Well, I don't. You know, it's their relationship. And so this time I went and I enjoyed myself. And when I started to see, I could still see, you know, those behaviors, I didn't have to jump in and fix it or make
right.
a mention of what, you know, I would do different. Or so when the one conversation that I remember just before we left the hotel, because we went to Savannah and celebrated her birthday, and so that'll segue into the alcohol thing. My son-in-law has, how do you say it? We think, my daughter thinks, you know, it's a form, extreme on the one spectrum of the autism, but it's just that he sees things differently. And so as I've done this work and been listening over and over, you know, to this work, it's just that he sees things differently. And so it's learning to accept that he's seeing things differently and wording things different from, you know, my speaking to that. And my daughter works on doing the same thing. But when I caught it this time, because I was listening better to our conversation,
right.
It was about, you know, something that had to do with with inheritance money or a property or whatever. And I realized it. And so when I started to share my perspective, I didn't jump in to fix it. I was able to say, okay, Daniel, okay, when I'm sharing this, it's just throwing it out there. You know, I was just supporting what my daughter said. It's not about it's not about fixing it. It's not coming up with a solution. We're not problem solving. So it's like in that responsibility communication. You know, we're not problem
right.
solving. We're just, hey, throwing this out there. We want to revisit. So out of that whole scenario of about 20 minutes, you know, and he was, you know, getting upset because she wasn't accepting this and blah, blah, blah. And I finally said, hey, you know, what I got out of this conversation is that we're going to revisit this later down the road. You know, in a few months, we'll talk about it. And end of story. So we were able to come to closure, but it's like it could have gone different if I had been where I used to be. So
nice.
It is
nice
letting go. And when I leave them, it's like, okay, she's going to continue to do what she's doing because she thinks that's what's working. As I continue to work on me, then it'll trickle down because anytime I interact with them, it'll be different. It'll be more positive. It'll be, oh, you know, I'm just going to work on me. And I see that So when I was sharing on the way home, I was able to talk with my stepdaughter, and I heard myself saying, you know, there's nothing I can do with anybody else. I can only do the work with me. And as that happens,
right.
I see them differently. So I see them as, yeah, loving, you know, child of God, just, and they have their own work to do, and I can't do it for them.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was great.
Yeah. Being the space is a powerful thing to do. Just being the space.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So then I took my time, you know, going back down because I'm learning how to be better at using my electric car, where the charging stations are, et cetera. And so I could keep from responding to my daughter's, you know, comment about how to drive down or how to drive up. I mean, you know, because she doesn't have an electric car. She doesn't have that experience. And so I can say, no, you know, I'm going to do
cool.
it this way. And then do it that way, and that's the end of it. And feel
yeah.
okay. Like, you know, that was from a loving place. And so, and yeah, so my drive
good.
Was comfortable and educational. And so I learned a lot of lessons when I went up. When I was driving up, I thought, thank you, God, that you're giving me this classroom today. And driving back home, all the lessons that I learned and more wisdom that I have. So
nice, nice. Cool.
It's all good. So let me address the
awesome.
Alcohol. I want to agree with you that for me, alcohol played a part in all of the poor choices that I made in either dating or adultery or whatever. Alcohol was there because for me, I didn't get angry. It loosened me up to do things that I didn't need to be doing.
Inhibitors
are
knocked out.
I believe were wrong. Yeah, and things that I believe
yeah.
are wrong. And I actually, in one occasion, blacked out and it wasn't a date. I was taken advantage of by some college students. And the next day when I woke up and I said, the young man where I stayed overnight because I was out, when I reflected on what had happened, he says, oh, well, they were drinking too. And I go, oh, right? Anyway, you know, I've dealt
like
with
that makes
your
it
work,
okay.
and yeah, so I've dealt with that for myself to let myself, you know, pardon myself, to work on forgiving myself over the years was when I started doing your work was that, hey, I coulda, shoulda, woulda gone to the police, and in those days, because it was in the 80s, would they have done anything? I don't know, but I kept thinking, oh, well, they wouldn't do anything, when I should have gone anyway. But then I let go of that because there's no use of me staying there in that position. But will I do something? Oh, yeah. You know, over the years, last years, yes, I've done something different. Even in this last marriage when I was tempted because I was in a different place with God and, you know, talking about that and reading more, a little bit more of the scriptures and stuff, I was able to stay out of the temptation. But I was able to do something different and that person is still a friend. But it's a different perspective when you call on your source, you know, and that we are love and we can stay in integrity.
Definitely.
But alcohol, and I've seen what alcohol does to others. When I was drinking as well in college, but when somebody had too much, I mean, what's profound to me is the time that I was so sore the next day from helping to restrain a girl that wanted to jump out the window.
Hmm.
And I, you know, how did I even get the muscles? Clearly it was adrenaline for me, but it's like we weren't maybe as drunk as she was, but she was horribly drunk and just having hallucinations. And I mean, there was, you know, a couple of guys with me. So we were all doing it. My muscles were so sore. So, you know, the power then of what the alcohol does, it's mind boggling. So
you bring up a
I
really
like
powerful point. When you look at all these statistics that I just shared, how much of what happens is covered up, hidden, or goes unreported. You know, when you look at,
yes.
I mean, 39 million rapes a year in America, and 25% of them related to alcohol. And I suspect the alcohol-related ones, the reported ones, are just not even scratching the surface. And, you know, it's like time for us to wake up and time for us to teach our children differently.
Yes, and a lot of it is because, like you said, when I was in a women's counseling group, and it's that you hear some of the same things that you're addressing, that because we felt so crappy about ourselves, you know, and wherever our power person was, that, you know, throughout the words that we took in personally, then we figure, oh, well, then nobody's going to hear me. Nobody's going to listen to me, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know, we've heard that in our intensives. You hear that. You heard it over the 50 years.
Yep.
So until we take care of ourselves and realize, oh, wait a minute, we were created, you know, on purpose. And this is not my purpose. It's about screwing around.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, kudos. Kudos. Yeah. Did you to finish that and post it? Yes. Absolutely.
Well, Anna, as you share that, I'm extra motivated to bring this to the forefront of the public mind. Because at this point, I have three very young granddaughters that are coming up into this culture that, sadly, you know, because of alcohol and drugs, is poised to destroy so many young women.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just, it's tragic. It's insane. And we need to get sane in this culture.
What we do is make it.
Go ahead. We lost you there. Your voice disappeared. You're back now. Your voice disappeared there for the last minute and a half or so.
What we do, but then I said what I've done is make excuses, and I do hear that in other places. Like for the smoking thing, oh, well, Jack Benny smoked, you know, for years and he was okay, blah, blah, blah. Well, you don't know that. And so the same thing with alcohol. Oh, so-and-so can drink, you know, and he's still he's still on his job. Well, that's not true. How are they functioning? You know, anyway, So it's
definitely wake-up time.
Yes. Yes, and thank you for doing that. I fully support getting it out there.
Cool. Thank you. Appreciate your input, young lady.
All right. Thank you. Blessings.
All right. Lots of love and blessings. Take care. Bye-bye. Well, Ms. Jeannie, you've got another hand up?
Yes.
Oh, go ahead.
I have another caller. We have an overlap here. So when you get that written, we'll put it on the website, but just to let everybody know, if you go to Start Here or the Bullseye, it takes you to where all the worksheets are. If you scroll down a little bit under the reality management sheets and the other worksheets, there is a section called Addiction, and there are special radio shows where we talked about addiction, where we've had guests who shared their experience in AA and familiar with this work and talked about their progress. There's also a section that says, do you want to stop addiction? Where to start? So that's already on the website, and we'll add this to it when you get it.
Sweet.
All right, the next caller is 517. I believe this is Angie. Welcome.
Hello, this is Angie.
Well, hey there, young lady. How are you?
Hi.
We haven't heard your voice in a while either. Welcome.
I know, I'm here. thank you. Hey.
What's on your mind?
So I put my hand up to comment and share a little on the article and also share its kind of, you know, dovetailing life experience and maybe get some support for a situation. Definitely all links together with the topic of addiction and alcohol and unconsciously driven behaviors.
Okay.
So my comment on the article is, thank you so much for writing this. And it resonated a memory I have of a healing process I went through right when I got back from India. There was about 3 days that I let myself move through the energy of horrific migraine that I first experienced when I was in the eighth grade and was, you know, taken to the doctor and diagnosed, and it's genetically, it's inherited, was what I was told. They're inherited generationally. As I processed through the energy and the patterns of it, I experienced my memory as a little girl, and also what I'm guessing is my parents and my grandparents, and I don't know how far back, this imprint of sitting, like being in that room with the people that I see a certain way, you know, that are my loved ones, my family members, that act a certain way. And then as the party goes on and they're indulging in the alcohol, they get louder and like almost like deformed and act so differently, and just the distorted experience, like, what the heck is going on? What's happening? You have felt so safe to me, and now I don't, you know, as a little girl, like, oh, I don't feel so safe anymore. Is that a kitty cat? Yeah.
Right.
Sounds
so like you've got a little one there.
I do. This is Aiden. There's a neighbor cat in his backyard. He's
saying hello to the cat. Cool. Sweet.
Yeah. Well, he's saying hello back to you, too. He can hear you. Let me see if I can put this on off speaker. Maybe it won't be so loud. Yeah, it was really interesting. The migraine energy was like that of getting hit in the head, proverbially, that energetically,
right,
like shut down and shut out. Kids weren't allowed at the table when there was the you know, the adult party happening, and just really interesting. What can I get for you? Okay. And
uh-oh. That's a sweet voice. That's cool.
Oh, he's so sweet. Yeah. Uh-oh, it got broke. It's okay. We can still play with it. There you go. So, as you know, I have been in a living in a relationship with a person who has been, you know, challenged to with the alcohol addiction. We've been sharing living space for almost 4 years. It would have been 4 years in September.
Right.
And romantic relationship ended last year. And last Saturday, I discovered that this person has been stealing money from me. I don't.
Ouch.
Kind of ouch, but really it's been ouch all along. So this sort of like is a huge relief in a way, because it makes sense now. And now I can see where every time I, what was really ouch was me ignoring my own signals, not trusting my own signals. I blamed it on my past relationship. Then all the trauma of, but seeing more clearly now, every time I would leave cash out or like get in my wallet and be like, well, how I thought I had this much. Now I only have this much, or he's actually stealing it out of my safe.
Ouch. Alcohol and drugs tend to do that. Again, you know, the way the brain works, there's a thing called the inhibitory system, and we have behaviors that are genetic that are, you know, modeled around us. And inhibitory systems, you know, when we say to a child, no, we're helping to install an inhibitory system. A much better option for the child is to assist bringing out whatever it is that we want to inhibit, and instead of inhibiting it, bringing healing to it, teaching properly. You know, discipline doesn't mean properly beat up, but properly taught. If we properly teach the child, then we can free them of that which otherwise becomes inhibited.
That makes
because when drugs
sense.
And alcohol are used, when drugs or alcohol are used, the inhibitory system is knocked out. And now all the things that everybody ever said, no, in one's own life or genetically, becomes an option. Because the inhibitor that would stop that from coming into activity is now gone, and it's just right there. And what yesterday would be absolutely abhorrent to someone becomes quite acceptable because the inhibitor isn't there anymore. And that's what alcohol and drugs do.
That is, I've been, the last several months, I've been addressing my I know, is this a green dinosaur? I was so afraid in myself that I had hidden material that could drive a behavior that was unconscious, you know?
It's okay. Sure.
Thank you. That's his eye, yes. Yes, that's but I have known that I couldn't make him do the work. I could only do mine, and that has been my focus. I want to be gentle with him and myself. And
notice what's happening with your breath right now.
Yeah, it just stopped when I think about, am I supposed, so I'm afraid of getting it wrong.
Whoa!
Yeah.
I'm afraid of getting it wrong, and I know I can surrender to let, you're so funny, you are silly.
And by the way, for anybody who might find yourself, for anybody who might find yourself as you're listening being, quote unquote, you think you're being irritated by a little voice in the background, my invitation would be to invite you to notice that, no, you're not irritated because that sweet little voice is going on. You're irritated because there's irritation in you, and it's a chance to handle the next layer of irritation if anybody's got any, and to embrace that sweetness that in our culture tends to say children should be seen and suppressed rather than children should be seen and heard and embraced. And so we have space to embrace that little voice and in love
Thank
and caring.
You, yeah.
Yeah. Where our culture wants to shut it down.
They are so
breathing with
oh
you.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Yep.
Pure reminders and reflections.
Yep, for sure.
Oh, thank you, Isaiah. That's a great job. Look at that. Oh. I know that there's a past. There's a imprint from the past of. Oh my goodness!
That's a lot.
Yeah. Okay. I've
here's the thing. The words that are coming up is I want to do the right thing. So that implies there's potentially a wrong thing I can hear. Isaiah's turn.
Well, and the opposite of right is not right. The opposite of right is not wrong. So sometimes there are things that work better than others.
So in the past, there's a story that goes, it's just presenting itself, that goes, you know, if I had held Ben better or held Jason accountable or, you know, been strong enough to, you know, stand and speak the truth and hold him fully accountable from love, then our lives, my family, my son, myself, and his.
Hi. How are you doing?
Hi. Hi. Is this your Batman cape? Do you want to put it on?
Okay. Here. Here.
No, it's Angie Hook.
No.
Oh, okay. Okay. You're going to do it. Perfect. You're going to hide. Where did Aiden go? Where is he? So then I could have controlled a different outcome or affected.
So my offering would be to be careful that you don't move this into self-blame. Because it sounds like you're bordering on, well, if only I'd done it then and you might want to be careful of, and perhaps it's a power person message that it's all your fault. And if you might want to forgive as to that one.
Yep, there's been a lot of energy moving in the last month or so before this came to light in my solar plexus, and the trapped energy there was, it's all my fault.
So the goal involved that you're going to want to do some forgiveness around is going to be the goal to be embraced as innocent, to be seen as innocent, to be innocent, to see yourself as innocent. They'd all be different worksheets to work on to get to the root of
that
self-judgment energy and get rid of it, let go of it.
I was seeing it as to get it right and not innocent. Mm-hmm. I wasn't working with the word innocent. That's really powerful. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so with Tyler.
Good breath.
Wow. Thank you. How about these? Should we build something with these Legos? Okay. With Tyler, there is still pain. As that blockage of truth. Collapse, you know, comes down. And I can feel more of myself. I can feel and see how I was like withholding, you know, life from my own self, from my own cells, from my own experience. Trying to make sense of what was happening, and probably blaming myself for what I was not mine to make sense of, I suppose.
Hi.
My conflict is whether or not to involve the authorities, the judicial system. And I certainly know that I won't make any step in that direction until I'm clear and it's not, and sure it's not coming from a place of punishment or blame or contempt.
Yeah, that's a challenge. Go for it. Breathe. What's happening? What are you feeling?
There's just an energy at the top of my, on my shoulders. Maybe. What can I help you with? You want to put this one on there? You got it. Like that? There. Boy, pretty precious reflections of the energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I acknowledge you for being so settled with and being able to be with him as carefully as I hear you being and still be in your own process. I understand the challenge of embracing both roles that particularly women tend to have more than men. But I certainly hear the challenge and acknowledge you for how gracefully you're handling it.
Thank you. It really is a testament of the work and having look at that. It's a birdie. Having embraced all the moments with my own son before I is that the sound the bird makes? Cuckoo. I like it. Chirp, chirp. It's been the greatest gift to my heart to be able to show up for myself and for these guys, healing and good medicine for sure.
Yeah, nice.
So, awesome. Let's see. Thank you. Thanks for the article on alcohol and drugs. I know the other issue is gambling for a certain person.
Yeah, another addiction. It's all about anesthetizing pain. You know, I've watched so many people over the years. You know, everybody's trying to figure out addiction. It's really pretty simple. If you have pain that you don't know how to handle, the tendency is for most people to find some way to anesthetize it. And when you give people the tools with which to unravel their pain, forgive it, remove it, then addiction just drops away. Here's what happens.
Maybe this is me. This is me in my pain. He has the tools.
Well, having the tools, you know, having tools and not using them means you don't have tools.
Yeah.
You know, if you remember that little section in the front of the book, Life Without Tools, having tools and not using them is a life without tools. So.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty cool. You know, another thing just popped into my awareness. I was going to mention speaking out to alcohol. The relationship that I had with my ex-husband in the past was the strong frequency of abuse playing out and playing through the dynamic. And he gave up alcohol a couple years ago, I think it's been now. And the last year, we've been able to engage in actual conversation, actual communication, actual care. Mm. And
awesome.
It's, you know, I know you know the degree of disparity that you two.
Yes, I remember.
Show up there.
Yeah.
And,
I remember.
Anything is possible. Like healing happens.
Yep.
When we're willing to embrace it.
You know, in the last analysis, we're all exactly the same. Behind it all is this being created of love, and when that can be, when the space is safe enough and that can be brought forward, everything changes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much. Thanks for holding space and showing up every day.
Glad to be on the team, young lady.
Yeah, same here. Thank you. Great. Thank you, Jeannie, too. Thank you so much. I'll get off here, see who else has something to say.
All right. Lots of love and blessings. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And we have another hand, area code 205. You're on the air. Is this Miss Joan?
It is.
Well, welcome, young lady. How are you?
Thank you. I just wanted to acknowledge Angie, as you did, for the graceful way she was managing two points of attention and being reminded of how, what a great challenge that is. But
yes.
I think most anybody who's been a mother could appreciate what she was doing and thinking, gosh, I wish I'd have had that awareness when I was Angie's age. And you'll remember,
well,
scared cabin. And Angie, I'm recommitting to holding you in space, dear.
Sweet. And, you know, doing that without tools is difficult because all those, you know, irritations, upsets, the times that as a child we were abused, person who didn't have any tools and didn't, you know, when all of that moves, if we don't have the tools to get rid of it, it tends to overwhelm, you know, what's resonated from within. And so that's one of the reasons we're committed to bringing this forward on a global scale, because it's time for the insanity to stop. It's time for us to move into human life again on planet Earth.
And another part of that was having the awareness, because so many times I would have been all worried about what the other listeners were experiencing and if they were irritated. And it seemed that Angie was totally aware that that's none of her business.
Yep. Yeah, and I hope, you know, I hope there was some irritation brought up for people, because then there's their opportunity to forgive that irritation. I mean, how powerful, how wonderful a reminder that it's not about, you know,
exactly,
what's coming through a plastic cone, some sounds coming through a plastic cone. It's about what that's resonating inside of us and moving through it. So,
exactly.
Sweet.
So I'm grateful to all of you. I was listening to Susan Bingham earlier, and I appreciate you and Jeannie so much and your commitment to this service to humanity.
Well, we're moving forward, rock and roll. You were on my mind yesterday. We were doing still point breathing there a couple of times. I thought, oh, I wish Joan were here. She would be so into what we're doing right now. We had just it's a small group, but an awesome process session that didn't even have to do with the still point, but just how this small community is coming together through the still point, the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing Club, and the processing that's happening there. But so holding you in our hearts, young lady.
Thank you.
And we're down to the last few seconds, so I'm just going to say much appreciation to everyone and have the best year yet of your eternal lives. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.